that they wouldn't record.
You know, the kids still remember how excited she was about that.
The dog was his family, I take it, at that point.
Yep.
No, we know who he is.
He was a fireman down there.
Right. And that's about all I remember about him. I don't think I've ever...
One of the most kind-hearted men I have ever in my life met. Yep. He's in poor physical health now. I'm sure you'd have to go to visit him to...
To do it, huh?
To do it.
I call this soup, but it's almost porridge.
That's good.
Yeah, this old Curtis Roberts. He was by himself, a lonely old man, mm-hmm. You know. And he'd come up to get the mail. He'd have to come up to Chena Hot Springs Road, and he was there down at the end of the road. And that was closer to come to our place than it was to go back to his place. And he'd come over, well, you figure, once, twice a week at least.
Mm-hmm.
He'd go up to get the mail, he'd come over to our place. And our kids were small, and they had these little kids' books that you get for
golden
kids.
Books.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they got him started reading to them. And there was a story in there about these animals, and they were talking to each other and so on. And old
Alistair's
son, okay.
Curtis would read that.
Call it dessert.
And this one animal would say something, and this other said, "You don't say, but I did say." And this repeated itself over and over. And old Roberts would get to laugh, and the tears would roll down his cheeks. And so after that, old Curtis would come up, "Kids, go get that book, open it up to that story," and they wanted him to read it.
Well, I swear, there must have been more bachelors, widowers, unattached males out here, and I suppose that was true everywhere, because that Maddie's stories are full of all the people that centered on Carl's place for a reason that you'll read about.
Mm-hmm.
And I know even after we've moved out here, there were still Frank Fessler and Everett Lynn Strand and Fred Anderson. Fred was the one that came to our place. He'd come up and help plant potatoes and harvest them, and then he'd eat out of our supply all winter. You know, we had a place to store them, and he didn't.
Mm-hmm. A couple of them worked for Pan Am, and Pan Am brought up enough food for everybody to have a meal. And then there were no shows or whatever. And
people that got sick because it was rough flying in those days.
They ended up with food that was being thrown out. And so the fellows out here picking it up and taking it home. And so some of the bachelors were almost eating regularly from some of the stuff that was left over from the Pan Am flights that didn't get used.
Oh, yeah.
Carl was such a soft touch that he would never turn anybody down.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, and the Grange is an example of the community working together. We always felt it was so important for the community to work together, especially being away,
mm-hmm.
out in the country like that.
Well, I think you had an advantage in being out that far. We were too close to town. Everyone went to town for school and for church and for shopping, And that's where their social life was.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't need it out.
Yeah.
And you were just enough farther out that it worked for you to have a community that we never did. We tried to get a community building going, and we had land donated and logs donated as long as you wanted to go out and cut them. And some men that did go out a few weekends and cut logs out of presses, Lloyd Press's place. But that's as far as it went. There just wasn't enough interest, you know, enough hard pushing.
Yep.
We were able to buy the land from the state, so we have a patent on that piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
The Davises donated the logs. Of course,
when were you
all volunteer
labor, right?
Mm-hmm.
When were you first officially arranged? When did you start?
60.
Yeah, I think so.
60 or 61. We started the building in 62. Finished it in 67.
Oh, that's a pretty good time, actually. Better than a lot of houses around.
He says finished, it's still not finished.
Oh, well. There's always something more to be done.
It was usable.
Well, I at one time, I think I actually wrote an article which never got submitted any place on substandard housing, because that's what we all lived in.
Mm-hmm.
And all the different kinds of substandard housing you could have and why. And it's still an interesting theme because, oh gosh, I asked Henry, I think it was, about where that house that he's in now. I knew there was something special about that place, and I couldn't remember what I knew, which was that it was a package house, an early day package house. But I said something about homes. What did they build it or something?
Mm-hmm.
And no, he says their house was built all out of a lad field packing crates.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true. Mm-hmm. First place we lived in town was built by Nick Idem from Golden Valley packing crates,
mm-hmm.
pretty much.
Yeah, you built out of what was available to you.
Mm-hmm. What you could afford.
Yeah.
The boy, building material was expensive. Still is. Well, I'm afraid that somebody's eyes were bigger than stomachs here, and I'm going to skip the rest of that.
You're not cleaning up your potatoes.
I'm not cleaning up my potatoes, sorry.
Oh.
That's what the dog's for. Do you have some
oil? Oh, honey, thank you. We've almost had children leave home over there.
ran across a card the other day, a Mother's Day card that Nathan sent long after he was out of the nest, saying something about from the kid that you sometimes, I can't remember what the first page was, but it tied in, from the kid that you sometimes had to sit on. And he was one of ours that we had to sit on or try to, the teenager.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about homes. Gosh, this was back in the 60s. We were pushing some agricultural program. And John Holmes was opposed to it. And he was the voice of agriculture in the legislature, you know. And he was opposed to this, and a bunch of us got busy. And we wrote letters, made phone calls, and everything we could. One morning, I was getting ready to go to work. The phone rang, and here was
John Owens. He says, "For God's sakes, call off the dogs." I said, "Well, we got his attention, huh?"
What makes me nervous is his son is there now.
Yeah.
With the same attitude.
I had a little problem with him last summer. He was on the borough assembly. And we're having a little trouble with our dumpsters. Out there, our dumpsters get filled with brush. Absolutely ridiculous, filling those dumpsters up with brush. Why don't they burn the blame stuff instead of plugging up the landfill with them? Paying some contractor to haul it to town. I mean, it's ridiculous. And then the dumpsters out of Esther, our son David worked down at the park for a year and a half, and he said, a good share of that stuff in the dumpsters at Esther comes from down at Healy and Cantwell and down that way.
People heading to towns are
coming to town. Well, and we're paying for it.
Sure, you bet.
And so I said, what they ought to do is man those dump stations. And then like this one out here where they got so much brush and stuff, put an incinerator out there, burn that stuff. Have somebody there manning the place, dump the stuff in the incinerator and burn it, take care of it, and they could make their wages, I'll bet you.
I'll bet they could.
Yeah. I talked to John Holm about it. John says, "Oh, no." He says, "How would you enforce that?" Well, I said, one thing that got me going was a contractor dumping asbestos shingles out here in the dumpster. I said something about somebody remodeling their place. Yeah, he says, "I'm remodeling a house for Spalding down on Noble Street. Now, all of the stuff out there in our dumpster instead of paying to go to the dumpster."
Boy.
You know? And so he said, "How would you enforce that?" And I said, "Well, number one," I said, "if a person had to show their driver's license or something before they could dump, you'd know whether they were local or legal or not, you know." "Well, yeah, but how would you enforce it?" And I said, "Well, don't let them in." "Oh, we can't do that. We don't have any authority to do that." He says, "We're like a lion with no teeth." He said, "We can't enforce it." I said, "Don't make any regulations." If you can't enforce it, don't make them.
That's right.
Man. And then he started going on about the cost. And I said, "No, I don't mean hire a borough employee and pay him retirement and all this stuff." I said, "Contract that, just like you do the hauling." And I said, "I'll bet you'll find somebody right there in Two Rivers, for instance, that would be glad to make a few dollars on the side and man that thing. And if you can get two or three people, you could cover it 7 days a week.
Part-time work that somebody would be glad to get."
"Yeah." "Oh, no, that just wouldn't work." "Come on, why won't it work?" "They don't want it to work, that's why." No, he and I had quite a discussion about that.
Did you ever read Bert Stemple's book? I was too obtuse to figure out where John Holm fit into that until about the end of the book. I think it finally got through to me. But boy, does he do a job on him. Oh.
No, it doesn't mention John's name in the whole book.
No.
But he sure, you don't have to know much about the community to figure out who he's talking about.
Yeah.
And Edith is portrayed quite well.
Talking about Bert Stemple. I love the story he used to tell about when he butchered his pig.
I haven't heard this.
Oh, gosh. He butchered a pig one time. And he had the carcass wrapped in a sheet laying on the, an old bed sheet laying on the back seat of his car. And he was going to take it into the locker plant there in town. And he was coming down past Rainbow Valley there. He saw Paul DeZula walking.
Oh, boy.
And Bert stopped, and he sat there, his head down on the steering wheel, you know. Paul came by and wanted to know if there was something wrong. No, nothing. He couldn't work out. Well, like to help him if there's something. No, I don't know. And they kept on. Finally, Bert says, I've just got to work this out. I did something awful. He said, I've got to work it out. Paul wanted to know what it was. Well, he said, I just killed my wife. She's on the back seat. Paul looked in there, and here's this bloody sheet on the back seat of the car. Paul's going to call the authorities right now. I guess they didn't speak for quite a while after that.
I think Ruth felt even with him, or maybe already had. There were a number of stories on her side of the deal. I guess Russ Wood was very much of a cohort of Bert's and a lot of these things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stories about...
You get Bert and Russ together, and I'll tell you, look out. Yeah.
Well, I have to see about Bob Hearn, and I was trying to think, John Cole.
John Cole, yeah.
Well, I tried to get a hold of him.
He's in our condo.
Yeah.
He is. Oh, he is.
We had dinner with him last night.
Well, would he be a good one to talk to?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, tell him I'm interested. See if he's willing.
They just sold their gold mine 2 weeks ago.
Their which? Gold mine?
Yeah, he had a gold mine up in Central.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Going up this weekend to get their personal things out.
Well, the only problem with all this is finding the time to do it.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Cody, that used to live on Bennett Road, somebody, and Julie Wood, I guess, that would be a very good one to talk to. Wish I could get somebody else to help with this.
What about that guy that lived right in the corner? What's his name? 7 Mile there.
Bob McQuinn?
No. The other side, the lower side. The inside. Donkey.
Rudy.
Oh, I know Rudy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, he hasn't been around long to qualify quite.
Yeah.
Well, he has, but I think there are others that are older and might go first. It's hard. Oh, yeah, we've known Rudy for years. In fact, they're the ones that donated the land or were willing to donate the land for the community building. Because Ann, his first wife, was always very community conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Rudy and mostly what I was doing was starting with that school district map, and the people that were on that were still around were fair game, and but there have been a number of others since then.
Well, there's Ed Anders out our way. They came out there the year after we.
Well, he'd be good to talk to.
And he's a younger person. He'd have a different...
Son. Yeah, well, he's a son of the family, right.
But he was...
But old enough to remember.
He was 16 when they came out.
Yeah, oh yeah, he'd remember.
And he's a good storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Let's see who else came out. Dines came out that next year. They aren't here.
No.
You need to find somebody out in that neighborhood to do those people, because there's no way I'm going to get to them all.
The only ones that are left of the first group are Ed Anders and Bob Hearn.
Well, they ought to be the first ones to be interviewed.
Where's Hearn now? He's in some home.
Think so. At least he wasn't last fall. But he's in very poor health.
We've thought several times
that he's not going to be with us long.
I'll stop up and see Bob one of these days.
But the other people have moved away.
Well, that happens.
You know, we were talking about Curtis Roberts being down at the end of Grange Hall Road.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was another interesting thing as far as I'm concerned. That was the Hall Road. The way that got named, when we were building Chena Hot Springs Road, we were looking for gravel to put on the road. And they went down there toward the river and found a good source of gravel. So they built that road up and hauled the gravel up from down by the river and graveled Chena Hot Springs Road. So that was the Hall Road.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the construction, as far as anybody was concerned, that was not in the system. That was just
there,
yeah. And, well, of course, hauling all that gravel over, they had to build it up pretty good to stand the traffic. So the road is actually got a real good base and a good sound. It was known as the Hall Road for years and years. Well, then the Grange bought that piece of property right at this upper end of it and built the hall there. And now it has officially become the Grange Hall Road.
That's a different spelling.
It went from an H-A-U-L road to a H-A-L-L road.
Yeah. Well, in a similar way, the road you came in on, which is now Herning Road, and incidentally we didn't think should be changed from Township Road, which is what was always on the bus route, we couldn't drive year-round, in fact very little of the year, mm-hmm. until they hauled gravel from down here for the highway reconstruction, yeah. But they came up through Lyle's place over here and came in just a little ways down the road. And part of the agreement with Lyle's to use their property to go across was to put a good base down there. So and culverts. We had a couple culverts put in. Made all the difference. But that meant that we didn't have to drive through Lyle's property to get in here anymore, which had been the case.
Yeah.
Now, the way these roads developed, I asked Charles Fabian, someone I've talked to on Bert's suggestion. Not Bert, but Henry. And I asked him about how the road came down Bennett Road, and he says, well, there had been a fire, and Mr. Bennett built the road, made a road down to get to that burned timber, dead timber, to cut the firewood. And then, of course, when Fabians moved in, they extended it to their place, and then I guess Farkas took it down the next step. There was no really permanent Hot Springs Road at that time. I guess there was a trail of some kind through there, but they weren't aiming for Chena Hot Springs. They were just getting to their place.
Yeah.
Some of them were just trying to get to water so they could get some potable water.
Yeah. That was always a big one. You must have put in a well out there?
No, we did later on. That was... See, we... The water supply for the whole Two Rivers area for years was Jenny M. Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the water. I mean, it was good water.
Yeah.
You drank it and everything. Well, now Beaver got in there and it isn't worth swimming in. But
we were told that years ago, our property had been logged over and they'd hauled the logs and floated them down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there are some stories about that sort of thing.
Whatchcalling told us that. Had independent lumber.
Yeah.
That
they named the dog mushing?
Yeah.
All right. What's his name? I know who you mean.
Yeah, no, you couldn't.
Tough to get old.
Yeah,
I'll tell you. Throw a little twig down there.
Yeah.
Now,
It was interesting to sit in court and listen to the old timers talk on how they came out about this far. Actually, it was a little further to cut hay.
There's a natural grass hay, right?
Stack it, and then they came out in midwinter and moved it on to whatever their transportation was going to be, hauled into town for the food for the the dairy and the blank.
Well, they were hauling it for the horses. I mean, they were hauling with horses, so they...
For the fuel.
Yeah, where was I reading not too long ago? Oh, I guess it was on the city walking tour. I went on one of those.
And they were stuttered.
Talking about where the NC stables had been down there. I think it was between 2nd and 3rd, probably. On down river from NC itself. Well, it never occurred to me, but of course when horses were the only transportation, there would have had to have been something like that.
Well, old man Kramer told me one time that in the wintertime, Charlie, the old man, used to carry up to the springs on the winter trail. And he said that somebody had a cabin up Jenny M Creek on up above Gina Hot Springs Road somewhere, because he said he would come through there and there'd be a note in a tin can hanging on a bush, and money and grocery list. And so his next trip out, he'd buy these groceries, bring them out, put them there by this brush, and he said, I never saw the guy. I don't know who it was.
Wouldn't be interesting to know.
Yep.
Of course, there were a lot of old timers that were here. There were a couple over here on Hopper Creek that I ran across this looking at old News Miners. I guess I was looking up the old man that used to live. He'd be right about where Nordale Road and Severns Road intersect down there. But in the process of looking him up, turned out there was a couple, I think they were loggers, woodcutters, lived on up the creek, and one of them committed suicide. And he was pretty ingenious about setting up his shotgun on a buck, a sawbuck. And on this all written up in the paper. Well, of course, this was long before our time, and this was back in the, probably the Depression period, I would imagine. It makes you wonder how many more old fellows there were like that that were just here supporting themselves, I suppose, trapping and cutting wood and doing whatever. In fact, I think I have copies of those clippings that I'll give copies of to you, because I made them for anybody who's interested. This isn't quite local history, as local history for you as it is for us, but it's still... To me, it's interesting as an illustration of what the country was like.
Right.
There was a fellow, Andy Swanstall, had a cabin up Gina Hot Springs Trail. And he came down and visited us a couple of times.
Swanstall. How do you spell it? Sort of a familiar name.
W-A-Z something.
He was a character.
A little bitty man.
Full white beard.
The community was full of characters. I guess you had to be a character to exist.
You know, he used to live, when we first knew him, he lived in a cabin right up, over 2 miles, 3 miles beyond us, was it? Up by Valley Center. Well, he had a cabin in there where Dixon's were at. Anyhow, we've seen he had an old red Jeep, and he'd go out in the morning and there was no traffic on this road out there, you know. Mm-hmm. Somebody came by.
You knew it.
Old Andy'd gone out that morning with his old Jeep and a trailer with building material on it, old tin and so on. He was going to be doing some building. And that evening, it was hot in the summertime. It was hot. And that evening, we'd gone down to the creek to get water to water our garden. And here Andy come. And he stopped and he says, "You folks like bear meat?" "We don't know. We've never eaten bear meat, you know." "Meat is meat.
Meat is meat."
"No electricity, no way to keep any, you know. Get some fresh meat, you take it." Right. And he said, "Well," he said, "I shot a bear today," and he said, "All I want is the hide." He said, "If you want the meat, I'll go back and get it." And so he went back and got this nice young cub that was in nice shape. Ooh. We took it home and hung it down there. Crawl space under the little dugout under the cabin. And Andy was telling us how he got that bear. He'd gone out there that morning and a blamed bear had gotten into his cache and got all his groceries. So he decided before he got any more groceries, he better get him a bear. So he said he strung a wire out around the yard and bunk. He said, "This wire, I run it in through a hole in the end of the cabin and hooked it onto a clothes hangers on a pole over the bunk." He said, "I figured pretty soon with clothes hangers you could." And he said, "I dozed off." He said, "I woke up and he said, those clothes hangers were just a going." He said, "I jumped up, grabbed my rifle, went out there. He said, I stepped around the corner of the cabin." He says, "Here's that bear." And he said, "When he saw me, he raised up like this, made a perfect shot." He says, "I guess that bear was just as surprised as I was. He probably never saw a man without clothes on before." That was Andy.
We better be
moving
on. I want him to look at the stove at the Grange Hall today.
Ah, yes.
We have a stove we've been using down there for a long time, and it's not getting as hot as it should.
Mm. What kind of a...
It's an old electric range.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Somebody's donated item.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
We donated another one, so we have one on one side of the kitchen, one on the other.
Good idea.
That was there is not heating up very quickly.
Sounds like it's lost some pizzazz or wiring or something.
Yeah.
Probably 220's only got 110.
Yeah.
We've had it down there many, many years.
Yep, you can probably get a newer one donated by now, but people keep figuring things are obsolete after a while, long before they really are.
We don't use it enough to warrant buying anything.
No.
At all, and,
no.
What you're looking at here is a mastodon tooth.
Oh,
yep.
Got another one over there in
the house. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
One of the local art types that worked that over into that. And the other one is I guess it was designed for it to look like a muskox. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like a muskox.
Huh. Yeah.
I'm here in the middle. He's heavy too. I mean, he must weigh, five, 6 pounds, something like that.
I bet you're about to melt.
Are either of you artists?
No. Crafty, maybe. But the rug in front of the couch is my.
Did you miss your child, huh?
And I didn't draw the picture. The fellow that painted that picture gave me for Christmas one year a sort of a paint by number deal. He drew that picture out and he numbered the colors and chose the colors out of my collection of wool. And then I did the work on the hand work.
Huh.
That
great stuff.
Yeah. You stand right there and then look up at the big one on the wall.
Yeah.
And you see where the... What's the dog doing in here, huh?
Well, she was about to melt out there on the porch.
She could stand to melt a couple of pounds of
them. Yeah, that's true. She's got a little to spare there.